Well, hi everyone. I'm Nate Mickish, and this is my beautiful wife, Megan. And thank you. This September marks 18 years of marriage. There's our wedding photo. Look at these kids. And in a few days, on the 22nd, marks a really special birthday for this gal. So maybe later we can sing happy birthday to her. Okay, all right. As Mandy said, we do have three beautiful girls, ages 11, 9, and just recently 8. So I was born and raised in Lincoln, Nebraska, to two loving parents and an older sister. My parents had just come to Christ within 5 years of my birth, and I can see in retrospect that they were really doing their best to figure out their faith while they were raising my sister and I. Mom and Dad didn't always get along the best, but they made it clear to us that they loved Jesus and that they were doing the best they could to provide us, to provide for us and to point us in the right direction. As a testament to this effort, I gave my life to Christ at the age of 6. As my dad walked me through what it looked like to confess my sin and need for Jesus' grace and mercy. While my need for Christ was clear to me at a very young age, what it meant to accept his love and grace and what it looked like to walk with him would take many, many years to figure out, up to and including now, as it turns out. As I grew into teenhood, confusion about Christianity and my faith in Christ led to many hard years of rebellion against my parents, against God, and basically any authority figure. I was prone to anger, insecurity, bitterness, and depression. I experimented with drugs. I hung out with the wrong people. I became the wrong people, and it was eventually expelled from high school. By God's grace alone, my wildest years coming into adulthood were while I was still in high school. And as a senior, Christ captured my heart anew, which allowed me to restore my broken trust and relationship with my mom and dad. I barely graduated high school academically, but I left with a stronger sense of God's grace and mercy and his unending love for me as I moved into adulthood. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it." This doesn't mean I wouldn't make a ton more mistakes going into adulthood, but it does mean that I would continue to be aware of God's pursuit of me. And a common theme for me as I grew up is that even if I tried to stop believing in Christ, I simply couldn't shake it. No matter what I did or said, I knew he loved me.
Is this on? No. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska. My parents were young when they had me. My mom was 18 and my dad 23. They married just before I was born and divorced by the time I was 3. My mom was in and out of relationships, worked swing shift, and spent her free time at the bars. My dad kept me every other weekend, but often canceled. And they both lived their lives as if they didn't have a child. They kept up with a lot of partying and drug use. My grandma, my mom's mom, whom we lived with, did a lot of the day-to-day task of raising me. And when I was 7, my mom gave birth to my brother, and through strategic planning by God, she came to know Jesus. Though my mom had a new faith in the Lord, it was a long journey getting my family's life out of chaos. My mom continued to spend much of her time at the bars and dating men. She ended up marrying a man within 6 months, and from the ages of 11 to 14, I lived the worst days of my life as I watched my new stepdad physically and psychologically abuse my mom, then 4-year-old brother, and our dog. Despite life being unpredictable and challenging from a young age, I had a deep love for the Lord. I consistently sought him until I hit my junior and senior years of high school. And during this season, my mom was back to dating men and was on to another marriage. The anxiety of having another man in the house drove me to numb myself with boys, alcohol, and drugs. I couldn't really see for myself how much I was hurting. I thought my actions were me being rebellious against God, but in reality, I didn't know how to cope with the abuse I'd experienced over the years. And I couldn't see it, but God was writing my story. He never left my side. In fact, the church I attended regularly in high school is what ultimately connected me with this handsome fella.
So through common church friends I'd grown close to as I graduated high school, I first met Megan. Admittedly, she wasn't into me at first. Obviously, I definitely married up. But I eventually won her over through the irresistible combination of shaggy hair and a guitar. Megan and I were both aspiring hipsters in the early aughts, and as such, I was able to get her attention by playing music in bands that she liked. I fell deeply in love with Megan very early in our relationship, but I could always tell there was a part of her that she was holding back. I chalked a lot of this up to the pain she experienced growing up in a broken home. I did not know or fully understand the depth of her pain and would sometimes be either naive or intimidated by her past. But despite my apprehension, I pursued her fully.
So I had known who Nate was in high school, but we didn't officially meet until the summer after I graduated, and we bumped into one another at a live music show. And it's true, I absolutely love that he played guitar, but I was more drawn to his genuine personality. I can't explain it, but when I met Nate, I felt like I was being drawn in by a safety net. Being with him brought me a level of peace and stability I had not experienced before. As amazing as things were between us, I nearly sabotaged our relationship. Over the course of a year, I had developed a flirtatious relationship with a much older coworker, and after a night of heavy drinking, I ended up cheating on Nate. And when I confessed this to him, I could see how deeply I had hurt him. I was fully prepared for him to break up with me, and I would retreat back to a life of chaos. And to my surprise, Nate wanted to work things out, and some of our closest friends didn't reject me either. I'll never forget my friend Josie saying to me, "You just made a mistake. And what the enemy intended for evil, God turned about for good." At this time in my life, I severely lacked the ability to establish building blocks for healthy relationships. And I knew Nate was good for me, but I longed for something more familiar, even if it was unhealthy. God used this situation to demonstrate unconditional love, mercy, and forgiveness to me. With Nate wanting to work things out, it opened the door for me to walk into and rest in God's grace and plans. It was the beginning of me learning to be vulnerable, trust in the Lord, and establish healthy relationships instead of running from them.
Megan and I had many, many challenges through the years that we dated, but God was always at work. The death of my father and her cheating on me created the opportunity to truly see the best in the friends and family around us that helped me grieve the loss of my father and also forgive and understand Megan. Not only that, but God was able to restore parts of my relationship with Megan that were damaged by our sexual impurity together. The first 5 years of our marriage were really good, but as we both began finishing school and pursuing careers, my love for her and Christ began to be secondary to my career ambitions and enjoying other pleasures. A good week for me was 50 to 60 hours of work, followed by 2 to 3 happy hours that went late into the night. Like most things, I didn't specifically set out to drift away from Christ. But when good things like meaningful work become ultimate things, trouble is never far behind. I didn't realize the impact that my withdrawal from Christ and from Megan was having on our relationship. When I was stressed or depressed, I found ways to withdraw into work and avoid dealing with issues at home. Moreover, my ability to talk over and invalidate Megan made it very hard for her to share her concerns about my behavior and the way I was drifting from Christ. Our marriage was never that bad, but nothing in the way that I was leading myself or my family was worth emulating. So in short, I was not the man I promised her I would be when we were married, and I was only getting worse in my isolation.
And our marriage represented a fresh start for me. It was so freeing to move away from the home I grew up in and have a place of our own. In the early days, we attended church regularly, but over time, that slowly faded from our lives. And within a couple of years, we were just going through the motions of life and not really connecting. I found myself growing frustrated with some biblical truths and distancing myself from God. At home, Nate was drinking more and becoming more angry with work. And at this time in our marriage, I avoided confrontation like the plague. So I never said anything. It wouldn't be until the birth of our first daughter, about 6 years of marriage later, that I felt a renewed connection with him.
So we moved to Texas with our first child and nearly immediately had a second. For Megan and me, Texas represented a fresh start in many ways. But without a community of believers to be connected to, old patterns are easy to fall back into. And as I aged, questions about God's goodness became harder for me to shake, leading to some dark places spiritually. In 2014, in search of community, Megan and I decided to go to Reengage. laughably, we both rated our marriage at a 9. Pretty big surprise by the end of that. We might have been the only couple that ended lower than when they started. So, but we were being more honest, at least. So it turns out I had no idea the kinds of issues we were having with communication, among many other things. But starting Reengage took Megan and I down the path of community in general. We eventually landed in a group of loving people that we did not always appreciate. Community is really hard, especially as you try to do it right. I struggled with the group mightily as being known didn't always feel very good. Proverbs 18:1 says, "He who separates himself seeks his own desire. He quarrels against all sound wisdom." And as Proverbs 18:1 warns against, I decided it would be better to go my own way. So in 2017, we broke up with our community group over text, which is what you do in 2017, I guess. So not advisable, definitely not in the field conflict guide. We spent 6 months in the wilderness before realizing what a huge mistake we had made. And with our friends helping us, another couple helping us as ambassadors, we were accepted back into the group. It was clear to both Megan and I that our marriage, our family, and our personal lives were not the same without community. While Megan is a huge help to me, sometimes my issues need a second hand. And the same for her. Our community group celebrates with us, suffers with us, processes with us, cuffs us into shape, and points us to the truth. Our marriage and our family are better with them in our lives. I still wrestle with many questions about why God does the things he does, but as Megan reminded me a few years back, Christ did not exclude himself from the suffering we all experience. Sorry. 1 Peter 2:21 through 23 says, "For you were called to this because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps. He did not commit sin, and no deceit was found in his mouth. When he was insulted, he did not insult in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but entrust himself to the one who judges justly."
So to go back a little bit again, in 2013, we're here in Texas, but I found myself at a crossroads with God. I was either going to walk away or make peace with my faith. And through a lot of thought and prayer, I ultimately returned to the gospel because of the historical evidence of the resurrection of Christ. And I decided to surrender my frustrations with the Bible. After all, I will not know the mysteries of God this side of heaven. 1 Corinthians 13:12 says, "For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I have been fully known." And when I surrendered my frustrations, I found myself filled with the Lord's peace. Plugging into church here and being in community has been one of the greatest gifts to our family. And I truly believe marriage is one of God's greatest gifts to us. I've witnessed the destruction that takes place when God is not at the center of marriage. And God put it on our hearts to serve here and reengage as we have a desire to see God transform individuals, marriages, our community, and ultimately generations to come. We love watching the ripple effect of God's hand.
So this is us today with our beautiful girls. So many here wonder what happens once reengage is over. How can you continue to grow in Christ and in oneness? And it really comes down to his word, his spirit, and his people. Also, as many of you know, there's typically more couples that want to participate and reengage than there are leaders that are available to serve. So as you go through the process as a participant, strongly consider leading a group in the future. I know it can be intimidating, but as another leader lovingly reminded me once, I can't even fix my own marriage, let alone the marriages of 5 other couples. So the job of a leader in Reengage is really just to deliver the mail. You encourage people, you point them to Christ, and work through the curriculum authentically with the participants. I believe the work that is done in Reengage is well described in Philippians 2, 12 and 13. "So then, my beloved, just as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who is at work in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure." So don't be afraid to hop in. God is doing his work. We just get to participate with him. Thanks for letting us share.